Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Joining me on the podcast, he is the voice of Ring of Honor Television, Kevin Kelly. Of course, Ring of Honor Television, it's everywhere in the United States now. Sinclair stations, it's on NESN, and of course, Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern on Destination America. Kevin, how's everything going for you, man?
Brian, it's been great. Very busy time for Ring of Honor as we count down the best in the world on Friday, June 19th. And, man, just TV's been blowing up. So, yeah, there's a lot to talk about, a lot of things going on for sure.
How are the pipes doing these days? Because I'm hearing the broadcast every week and want to make sure the pipes are doing good.
The pipes are great. That's the good thing about having Carino there with me is I let him shoulder some of the load, and we're having fun, so it's easy.
Are we sure that's a good thing, especially when we're letting the guy go wild and call himself King Carino?
Well, he's not royalty, but it's kind of a hybrid version of the King of Old School nickname, to where now it's just boiled down to King Carino. But I like Steve a lot, unlike you, and I think that he and I have we have a lot of fun and we have good chemistry, but I certainly have no problem pointing out his foibles, which there are many.
If I didn't bust his balls a little bit, he would be disappointed that I didn't do it.
It's true. You know, again, if I sat there and played nice with him, it would be a boring show. But if I go out on a limb every once in a while and take him with me and then push him off, it's always good. It's good TV.
Absolutely. So, and that's one of the points I wanted to bring up too, because when it comes to the broadcast team, I think, without trying to kiss any butt or anything, I think you and Steve do a fantastic job of doing the broadcast. How long did it take for the chemistry between the two of you, or do you feel like it just came together very quickly and naturally?
Well, Steve and I have known each other for a long, long time, and we're a lot alike. We're both in our 40s, and we're both fathers of young children, and we're both sports fans. So we get along well. We come from sort of the same roots. And so I think that kind of lends itself to a natural chemistry. We're both old school wrestling fans. We were rabidly fanatic about Georgia Championship Wrestling back in the day. So our chemistry did sort of come naturally. I had to make sure, you know, that producing Steve can be tricky because, we've gotten much better at it, but it took a little bit of doing to kind of get him going in the right vein. Don't be afraid to say what's on your mind, but just condense it down a little bit, and then it was great. I really enjoyed working with him. I like seeing all the directions that he's willing to go, and I'm happy to facilitate that. It's always, he's got his favorites. He loves that. He's in love with Adam Cole. He's buddies with ACH. He hates B.J. Whitmer. So you never know what you're going to get with King Carino.
Well, I was going to say, too, when it comes to doing a broadcast, you want to add your own natural charisma, your own style. But at the same time, how tricky is that when it comes to not going too far away on tangents and kind of adding your own flair to a broadcast?
He and I both know the importance of the product with Ring of Honor is what's in front of us, and that's the ring. It's on neither of us. The best thing that we can do is just to facilitate the audience's enjoyment of the wrestling action and just, again, a little bit of garnish on the side. That's what we are. We try to lay out as much as possible to let the audience be heard because they really are the unsung heroes in the popularity of Ring of Honor. The crowd of ROH drives the audience experience at home, I think, like no other in wrestling because it's such a sound. When you're there live, you get it at one level, but when you're watching it on television, it's just completely different than anything else you might see.
And the one thing that I really appreciate, too, is just the overall style of what you are trying to accomplish, you and Steve, but particularly you, since you are, driving the bus, so to speak, when it comes to the broadcast. And, you're putting it out there. You're telling the story of what we're seeing in the ring. It's kind of a throwback to considering to what everybody is used to in this day and age of wrestling and trying to promote so many different things and trying to squeeze so many things in there that it's a little bit more laid back. And you know what? I'm going to explain to you what you're seeing, you know, on TV right now. And to me, that's refreshing. And I enjoy the broadcast like that. Is that a conscious effort to do it in that manner?
It really is. I try to just lay back as much as possible. To me, I think the picture tells the story, and I don't need to regurgitate the obvious, but I do need to point out the importance. So that's sort of where that, you know, editor's touch comes in, and being able to kind of dial it back on the fly if necessary. I want to make sure that I do get my key points out, and there is some salesmanship in there. I'm really going hard at, best in the world and making sure that everybody understands the importance of that event. And, you know, the main event with Jay Briscoe against Jay Lethal, it's like no other. So I've got to blend all of that in with helping to get the characters over organically, because the fans dictate who they like, who they don't like, and what they want to see. And we're seeing that translate on the road because the live event attendance has increased. And I think that's a direct result of the television product.
Do you ever have to catch yourself when you are calling a match that's very up-tempo or there's a lot going on and making sure that you're not trying to do too much?
Oh, sure. And again, I got caught up in a match recently that we'll see in an upcoming episode of Ring of Honor Wrestling, and it was during the War of the Worlds in Philadelphia with Roderick Strong and Hiroshi Tanahashi. During the course of the match, Roddy caught an elbow from Tanahashi. Right at the hairline, and just busted him open, right? So he's bleeding pretty profusely. And Roddy shirked the doctor away because the doctor was thinking about stopping the match, and he kept going, and then they went into a real athletic series, and I found myself like screaming because it was so good. And it was after that, I was like, whoa, I got to dial this back, but it was just, so good. Sometimes you can't help but get kind of swept away with it.
But that's the thing that I think people appreciate, is that as long as it's not too over the top, but you're showing passion, that you are into it, that you are a fan just as much as the person that's watching at home, and they can appreciate your enjoyment of it too.
To me, the action is so good that nothing is manufactured. I've been critical of other wrestling announcers in the past for having, for it sounding manufactured, whether it is or whether it's not, it's got to come from a genuine place. And everything that I try to do tries to come from a genuine place, whether it's like or dislike. Like last week on the debut episode on Destination America, I had to sit there while Steve watched his 18-year-old son Colby be physically destroyed by Moose. And that was tough to see because I was feeling Steve's body language, and he was very nervous, and he hated it. But on one hand, he was happy that his son was making his national television debut, but my God, not like this.
Right.
And certainly not with BJ Whitmer pulling the strings. So I could feel that, and my kind of natural fatherly instinct kicked in as well, and I felt bad for my friend Steve. I felt for Colby what he was going through. And the people that were sort of behind all of this, you know, the decade, they felt my wrath in terms of my disgust. But that's what we do. And when the action is that good, it's easy to sound real because to us it is real.
One more thing when it comes to the actual broadcast, because, you know, I work in broadcasting, obviously you do, and it's something that fascinates me because when it comes to what I'm going to be watching, especially when it comes to wrestling, but to most sports as well, that I have a hard time sometimes enjoying the product if I can't get past the broadcast team, because it does mean so much to me. And, you know, they're the ones that are conveying the message of what I'm watching right now. And do you have that same effect when you're watching a broadcast, whether it's wrestling or whether it's sports or whatever, where you have a difficult time, or maybe you're not enjoying it as much as you could be because you don't like the broadcasters?
Absolutely. I'm not sure whether that's you, because you or I both work in the industry and we're both in the medium, but I think no matter the sport, if I like the voice, I'm going to be more apt to watch it. Like, I'll watch a hockey game with Doc Emmerich calling it, and I don't even care who the teams are.
Right.
Just because I enjoy his work so much. On the flip side, let me think of somebody who I don't like, and I don't know, it's hard to, a couple of analysts, like a football analyst, like if you said a name, it would probably, like Randy Cross drives me up a wall.
Yeah, there's some local baseball markets where I'm just like, what's going on here right now?
There's some definite likes and dislikes in terms of the broadcast. We're an important part. We're not everything, but boy, oh boy, I would hate it if somebody was like, "I am not watching Ring of Honor because I hate that guy's voice." Oh, I would be sick about that.
No one and should say that.
It does happen, but I hope, you know. Again, that's why I try to stay out of the way as much as possible.
Well, I will say this too, because that's one of the things that I really like about Ring of Honor is that you are announcing it with Steve, and you guys are so good with the chemistry and just the way that you guys do it. And I would hope that anybody that, you know, really gets into the broadcasting side and really enjoys that, that's just another reason to watch Ring of Honor. And also for anybody that aspires to do it, that I would think if you are looking for somebody in today's wrestling, I'm not trying to put anybody else down, but I think a perfect example of somebody to learn from or to watch and, you know, take notes from is to watch you do Ring of Honor.
Well, I appreciate that. I think our style is kind of tailor-made for Ring of Honor. I don't know if we would fit in this sports entertainment genre. I don't think that they would be grooving on what our natural instincts are, and certainly vice versa. I don't think it would be a little bit of a square peg in a round hole kind of thing. So I think any, you know, would-be broadcasters out there, regardless of what sport you call or what you aspire to do, you have to understand sort of the landscape of where everything is and what that popular sound is now. But then again, who you work for. If you're calling games for the Chicago Cubs, you better watch what you say, because there's been more than one occasion where players have taken umbrage with Pete Stone or somebody and have gotten hot. Now, I don't know whether or not those guys are still on the team anymore, but you've always got to be careful with what you say and how you say it, especially if you're doing more of a local broadcast.
Well, Sammy Sosa isn't there to complain about Steve Stone anymore, so.
It was sad. Wasn't it Granky that complained about a Royals announcer?
Yeah.
I think so. There have been stories that have come up from time to time. And listen, I'll be perfectly honest. There's been at least one Ring of Honor wrestler that has not been happy with something that I have said about them during the broadcast. And we've had to talk about it. It hasn't been recently, but it has happened.
Can you imagine that?
I apologize. I'm driving
as I do this.
But it happens. And so we talk it out. And we put it behind us. So everything is okay. You're not going to be everybody's favorite. Sometimes you're going to say the wrong thing or what you think is the right thing at the time. And maybe it's not what they want to hear. But at the end of the day, we part as friends and we all work together.
Yeah, the broadcasting business has changed so much when it comes to sports teams, especially for local broadcasts, because it's almost like they want you to rah-rah so much for the team. And I think there's a difference between being a fan, but also telling it as it is. And there's a certain respect value that goes with that. Like, go back in the day of whether it was Chick Hearn for the Lakers or Johnny Mose for the Celtics. Especially when it came to Chick, Johnny was a little bit more of a rah-rah guy. But if they saw something going bad for their team that they were doing wrong, they'd call them on it too. And I think fans really respect that.
When we first got WTBS on cable, when I grew up down there in Stewart, and I was able to listen to Skip Carey do Braves games.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, are you kidding me? A partial sellout here at Fulton County Stadium. There's like 9,000 people in the place. It cracked me up. And that self-deprecating humor, being able to poke fun at yourself, being able to, hey, listen, this is a turd, but we're going to kind of put a little stripe on it as best we can. But at the end of the day, it's still a turd. You folks out there know it.
Did you ever listen to Skip Carey do, because every like once in a couple of weeks, he would have to do a portion of the pregame show for the Braves radio network where they would take fan calls, and there was nothing more that pissed him off than taking fan calls. And there would be the one guy every week that would get him to explain how they make up ERA, and it would drive him up a wall.
He was the best. I loved him. That quartet that they had with him and Ernie Johnson and Pete Van Wieren, and I think John Sterling was with it for a while.
Yeah.
Coleman was with it for a while. There was another guy. But the three main ones of Pete, Skip, and Ernie were, sounds of my young teenage years.
Yeah, now we get Sterling calling A-bomb for A-Rod, and you're on the Mark Teixeira with the Yankees. So
he's become such a parody of himself. Now, that's a guy, there's a perfect example. Radio station I used to work at carried Yankees games, and I could not listen to it with him and Susan Waltman on there. Nails on a chalkboard for the male and female variety.
Susan Waltman's the worst. If we want to crack on somebody, the infamous Roger Clemens appearance years ago when he was up in the box.
Oh my God!
Roger Clemens, the greatest moment in the history of the Yankees. It's like, what is going on?
We could do an hour on Susan Waltman, but let's move on.
Yes, let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about Ring of Honor on Destination America, because last week was the first week for Ring of Honor on the cable channel. Tonight, we're taping this just a couple of hours before Ring of Honor is on TV. How surprised were you about this deal coming together?
Shocked. It was a surprise, and I found out about it when I got a text with, hey, here's your Destination America image. Feel free to put this up on social media. And I was like, what? Wait. So then I had to get kind of filled in with the backstory. I knew some things were brewing, put it that way. But we had gotten TV, we have a syndicated deal with a station in Atlanta and in Dallas. And I had heard about the Nesson thing. And we're always adding stations all the time as Sinclair buys more stations across the U.S. But I had a feeling that something was going on, but I didn't know what or to what level. It was very surprising, but a very good surprise.
Yeah, it's funny because now we talk about all the different places that you can find Ring of Honor. And, the Sinclair stations and Nesson, and like you said, the stations in Dallas and in Atlanta. But it really, to me, means so much more that there's one channel, and I know it's not on in every home, but it's on in about 50 million homes, where there's really one spot that at least for the next, 6 months, that's, a big cable channel where you can find Ring of Honor. And that has to mean a lot for the company, to where now it's like, oh, you know what, even if I didn't think I could find it before, I didn't want to look, now you know exactly where it's going to be, and it's on a big channel, too.
Able to see some of the young guys and girls who have never been on, a national cable channel before, to see their reaction and how excited they were. That made me feel great, because I was so happy for them. I know it's an important step for the company, and at least for the next 6 months, we're going to be on that channel. And I would assume that if everybody likes us and if the fans are tuning in, that and they'll keep us around for more. I know that some of the word I've gotten is that, they've kind of been happy with the response that they've gotten via their social media. They've gotten a tremendous amount of response out doing kind of anything they'd ever done before. So that's good. And I know with our rabid, passionate fan base that Ring of Honor fans are going to seek us out and tell everybody about it.
How much do you think when it comes to, because obviously it is a business come the end of the day, but how much is it the end-all, be-all when it comes to ratings? Do you think that is the case when it comes to Ring of Honor? Because obviously, that has to be a part of it because it is a business relationship. But I do wonder if that is all that's meant to be, if there's more to it, especially with the way that social media is utilized these days.
I'm not really sure, and that's a very good question. I think that at the end of the day, we all live in a numbers-based world. So there will be some sort of measurable as to whether or not the relationship continues or inevitably ends or who knows what. But there are, whatever those metrics are, I hope that they put them out there and say, listen, this is what we're looking for. You want that with anybody. If I've got goals to hit, let me know what those goals are. And I have a feeling that the conversations that Joe Koff has had with Destination America have been, pretty clear as far as what they are hoping to get us to attain and what we're able to deliver. So I think whether it's ratings or social media imprint or however it's generated, whatever those numbers are, I hope that we'll be able to deliver and then some.
How much of that do you watch? Are you somebody that makes sure you know the numbers every week?
Well, I saw the ratings for last week, and the first question that I asked was, well, is that good? Because I have no idea whether or not the ratings that we delivered in our first week were good, bad, or in the middle.
Right.
And they had to kind of be put into context with what TNA did on their first week on Wednesday night. And then you hear like, okay, well, the NBA Finals are doing record ratings. It did a 13-7. I was like, well, is that more than like the Magic Bird era? I don't know. I have no idea. But so I look at it and I go, okay, is that good? That's always my first question. So what's your take? Did we do good? Did we do well the first week?
I would say that I thought the same thing, that I wasn't sure. The way that I looked at it, though, was a couple of factors. Number one, how much promotion did that Destination America actually give you when it came to the actual station in advance? And I don't think it was that much at the beginning. And the other thing is, too, I don't like to look at just a 1 week. I like to look at 3 or 4 weeks. And I like to see, is something an aberration? Is it because it was new? Is it because of other programming it went up against? People just didn't find it. People didn't know about it. So to me, it comes down to, let me see at least 3 weeks. And then by then I can tell you, if it's a good number or not.
I know when I worked in the WWE, when the ratings were bad and we were fighting uphill against WCW, the conventional wisdom within the country was that it was rigged and Nielsen hated us and the numbers weren't real. Then when everything switched and we were on top, it was, look at the great work that we're doing. Wait a minute, I thought you said the ratings were a sham. A year or so ago. So it just depends on what side you're on. But either way, listen, if we got one new fan out of last week's show, and I'm not sure we got more than that, if we got new fans, then really to me that's all that matters. And I already noticed it this past weekend because we traveled to, and again, excuse me, I'm on the road and heading home. At the airport, we had fans that kind of stopped. I traveled with the Briscoes last weekend, and fans stopped and said, hey, guys, what's up? Like they knew who they were. Now, was that because they had seen them on a local Sinclair station or because it was on Destination America? But we traveled a couple times together, and I hadn't noticed too much fan interaction, but it was like two right in a row. So who knows? Maybe it's that national cable footprint is getting folks, more in tune with who the stars of Ring of Honor are.
Right. And if you really want to do comparisons, I believe Ring of Honor, when it came to first run and the replay, you add that up and it did about the same number as TNA. Is that good? Is that bad? I don't know. And I'm not saying there's a competition there, but it's just something else to kind of grade it against. So I'm not trying to cop out about it, but, I don't like to jump to too many conclusions. I think, what was it, like 162, I think, was the first run number, something like that. So, let's see what happens tonight. Let's see what happens next week. And then by that time, if people are going to know about it, I think they'll know about it.
Agree. And like you said, I know ratings, I think it was, I forget who said it. The quote was, ratings move at a glacial pace. So it takes a while for momentum to be gained with television ratings. We hope that it continues on the trend upward, but we don't know. I don't know what they're looking for, but boy, it's sure exciting to have this conversation.
And I was going to say, the locker room has to be so much fun right now because, when good things are happening, people are going to be in a better mood. I think people perform better, whether it's people that are in front of the camera, behind the camera, whatever case it is, it's just to be a part of something like that. So, it's more than just getting on Destination America. It's kind of this uptick that's been going on, I think, over the last probably 18 months when it comes to getting different TV and just the amount of talent there, the show and how good they have been. what has the locker room been like when you are out at events, you know, over that period of time, and how do you feel that?
Well, I think, you know, it's a amazing group of athletes that we have, you know, culled together and pulled together right now. It's a pretty tight group, and everybody was pretty psyched for everything that transpired over the last week. But like I said, it's been a real upsurge. And again, when the attendance is up, when they're in front of more people, that's going to get them more excited. And I think, you know, live event attendance is up something like 80% over a couple of years ago, and like 25% over last year. You know, when you look at comparing not just weekend by weekend, but also, hey, what the last time we were in this particular town, we did this, and now this time we're up. So it's been a hot run of successes. We've got a lot of great houses, and we know that it's, you know, again, all the good forward moving momentum is just going to continue.
You're the perfect guy to ask this to. You talk about how tight knit the locker room is. I think everybody is pulling for one another. Everybody, obviously you want your own personal success, but everybody is pulling, you know, for one another, I think. During, you know, when you were with the WWE and during the hot time that was going on there, you know, I think guys banded together only because of, or the main reason was, hey, if we don't, you know, fight the good fight here, we're going to have a problem with the job because of what's going on, you know, with WCW. Do you think it's changed a little bit more when it comes to the locker room culture overall of guys kind of, you know, having each other's back a little bit more than what it has been in the past? Because, like I said, while there's competition, I don't know, and maybe it's just because I'm a little further from it. Is it cutthroat when it comes to spots on the card and things like that? Or do you feel like it's a little bit different now?
Everybody's very competitive. It's a competitive business by nature, no doubt about it. But as far as like backstabbing or anything like that, I see none of that. And there were many examples that I saw when I was in the WWE with guys just, again, politicking to try to get above someone else. And that doesn't fly. It doesn't happen in Ring of Honor. Everybody's competitive, and they think that they can, you know, outdo or top the other. But in terms of not wanting to take from someone else so that you can have, I think that's very, very much very much the mindset of the company. It's kind of that what they have is what they have, and what I have is what I have. And while I may want to be where they are, I'm going to earn it. I'm not going to try to take it away from them.
Do any of the guys ever come to you for advice, especially when it comes to maybe how to handle a situation or something that's political?
I've been, that's one of the things that I like to do. And, you know, I don't ever really talk about it, but when somebody does come to me, I can speak from experience on a lot of things. Now, I can't speak as far as the experience of being a wrestler. So there are certain things that I defer to others on. But when it comes to having conversations, when it comes to asking for things, I can generally lead them in the right direction, because a lot of young guys, they don't know because they don't have the experience. And sometimes it's hard to have, you know, tough adult conversations with somebody that might be your superior. But if you just let them know that it's okay, just have the conversation with them. Don't let it build up to where it becomes an issue. And I've seen a number of examples where things have gotten out in the open and everything has worked out. So yeah, I enjoy that part of, that's one of the best parts about being older, Brian, is that you get to know stuff because you made a lot of mistakes, and you can rely on those mistakes to help counsel others.
I know about that very well. From my own experiences, I think we should refer to you as the Obi-Wan Kenobi of Ring of Honor now.
Yeah, it's great when you're that old and you have that type of thing. I've seen a lot. You know, it's my 25th year of professional wrestling. I started in 1991. So when we get to next June, I will be, you know, 25 years complete. So you go through a lot of experiences, and you can't, again, I wouldn't be doing my job. Part of what we are in this generation is we're caretakers of professional wrestling, and we have to ensure that it lives on to the next generation. So we have to make the business right. We have to train others. We've got another tryout camp coming this weekend, which is sold out. We're going to have like 40 young hopefuls that want to come and learn and want to show what they know. And maybe they get an opportunity to do something Ring of Honor. But we try to leave everybody better than how they came in. In fact, every single person that attends those camps is better than when they walked in the door the first day. So we're looking forward to that this weekend. And that's what my job is now, man. I got to make sure that this business is better.
You talk about being in the business now for 25 years, and obviously a lot of people associated you the first half of your career with WWE. When you left there, were you worried about if you're going to have another broadcasting job in the wrestling business?
I thought it was pretty much over because I had been kind of shopping a resume around with WWE on my resume for a year after losing my job in 2003, and I got nothing. I was like, wow, nobody wants me at all. This is great. I'm tremendous. So I was like, okay, what else can I do? What kind of wrestling is sales? So let me see if I can get into sales. I made a transition into sales. And then just, it was, I didn't think it would ever, it wasn't like one of those situations, oh, it'll be a matter of time before I come back. But one thing that I know for sure in wrestling is that there will be other opportunities, especially if you don't expect them. So that's kind of why I'm here now.
What's the reaction when people find out that you work in pro wrestling, and especially now compared to what it once was? Because I'm thinking maybe in the past, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe people rolled their eyes a little bit more, but maybe now it's a little bit more socially acceptable, I guess?
I just got home. My dog is very excited to see me.
Well, who would be?
Oh, my gosh. It's funny because it always seems to be the same reaction. I think there was a bigger reaction back in the day than now, but because a lot of people say, oh, man, I used to watch it when.
Right.
And so some fans, the number has certainly lessened. But I think in terms of, wow, is that what you do? Cool. I get a lot. I've always gotten a lot of that. And, you know, people that I know outside of wrestling, when I meet them and I tell them what I do, they think it's true. So, and they always ask me questions about people I know and what is so-and-so like and do an impression of, you know, what you sound like when you're an announcer. And I'm like, just, you know, please stop talking to me now.
What's the question always? What's The Rock like, and what was it like to do things with them backstage?
Right. What's The Undertaker like, and what was Stone Cold like, and what's Vince McMahon like? And I pretty much just make up stories.
Remember that time he called you Hermie?
Oh, remember, man, when they did that? And so it's a lot of those Chris Farley moments.
I'll bet. So obviously, Ring of Honor recently got done with the shows of working with some of the stars from New Japan Pro Wrestling. We're seeing those now on the television show. What was the most difficult part in preparing for that? Was it just getting used to names or move sets, or what was the most challenging part in preparing for having to call matches with those guys?
The pronunciation of names is always tricky, so I always like double triple check myself. I try to just sell the guys as stars.
Yeah,
they are stars. What they did to me, secondary to the star power and the presence that they had, I was swept away with how they were revered. A guy like Nakamura, who comes out, and he could have done anything that he wanted to. He could have read poetry to the crowd, and they would have, forget it. They lost their minds when he came out.
I would have loved
Okada,
to see that.
Okada, Tanahashi, Liger. Just instantaneous superstars right before our eyes. To see them blend with the Ring of Honor stars was just invigorating. To see how, okay, so these are top global stars that we're competing against, and to see our Ring of Honor guys go step for step with them in every match that they were in, to me was just thrilling.
I would have been nervous as hell trying to call and make sure I pronounced all the Japanese names correctly, because the second you barely get anything wrong, you're dead on the internet.
Well, yeah, and so I tried to avoid that, to mitigate disaster by avoiding problems along the way. And I let Steve do a lot of that. I'm like, yes. Steve, what's that?
That's what I was going to say. Just blame Steve.
There's that landmine, Steve. Go step on that.
Right. Diffuse this problem, please. Please.
Right.
So you've got Best in the World coming up in New York City on the 19th. And then on the 20th, you've got the TV taping as well, which is going to be the last appearance for Samoa Joe with the company. What do you think the atmosphere is going to be like for that? And also, what's your thoughts on his deal? I mean, it was funny because now, obviously, he's going to be going to WWE for whatever role. But that was a pretty unique deal, the way that I think that all came together and him still being able to do at least this one Ring of Honor show and work for them.
Yeah, it just, again, worked out great for us and for the fans, being able to see Samoa Joe one more time in New York. I have a feeling it won't be his last time in New York, but
right.
At least in Ring of Honor. Just to be able to see Joe, to get this level of, it's beyond acceptance. It is I'm trying to think of the right word of how to describe it. But in its proper context, I think the way Joe is being treated right now is akin to the type of wrestler that he is, the star that he is. He deserves special treatment.
Yes.
He's that good. And I think that everybody's shocked that WWE is doing this, but it's like, this is a special guy. And guys like this don't come around very often, so you know what? They're going to do something special. To me, it's kind of like Brock Lesnar, where Lesnar has this unique contract that he does. So why not Joe? Why not somebody else? Why not allow the guys to be who they are? Would they be in the same situation that they're in with CM Punk if he was given that same type of deal? I don't know. But I have to imagine that if guys are happy doing what they're doing, that they're going to stay with you longer, and they're going to be they're going to enjoy it more and more, and the fans are going to enjoy it.
And I'm not saying that this should be done with everybody or there's a lot of different people you could do it with. And I understand that there's competition between the different promotions and you want to protect your own guys and everything like this. But to do something like this when a special guy comes along and there's a unique opportunity, I think it's good for everybody that's involved in the process. And I think it's good for wrestling as a whole because I think you get a lot more buzz. And guess what? Ring of Honor is going to get some more attention off that, and WWE is going to get more attention off that, and NXT, obviously, part of WWE. I think that for overall, that's good for the wrestling business, and I hope that there's other unique opportunities with the right guy that we'll see it again, and that remains to be seen, though, I guess.
Yeah, again, it's a case-by-case basis, and there's not a lot of Samoa Joes out there, for sure, but the idea that the fans will be able to see him on Saturday, June 20th at Terminal 5, tag team match with AJ Styles against Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian. It's just going to be a great treat for the fans, and it's just going to cap off a huge weekend. Is it going to be Jay Briscoe? Is it going to be Jay Lethal walking out as the definitive world champion, winning both belts? We don't know, but it's going to be a remarkable time for Ring of Honor.
Last thing, when it comes to that overall buzz that I just talked about for the wrestling business, do you think, I get the feeling too that there's a lot of buzz going on with Ring of Honor because of what they're doing. There's a lot of buzz and excitement about NXT. How much do you think that plays off one another and helps the other group?
Well, if you look at just the roster of champions that, the WWE had coming out of WrestleMania, where, Seth Rollins was their world champion and was our former world champion. Daniel Bryan was Intercontinental champion. Kevin Owens, was Kevin Cena, our world champion, now the NXT champion. I think that there's a line that's drawn from Ring of Honor directly to NXT and the WWE. This is where the stars are made, and a lot of them go on to, other opportunities in their career. And if that, obviously, if the best company in the world, which is the WWE, is taking the guys that are on top of Ring of Honor, obviously Ring of Honor is doing something right, because we're churning out guys that they want to see, that they want to have, that are marketable stars. So it speaks well of our company. It speaks well of the guys themselves. And we hope it continues. I'm sure it will.
Kevin, you're doing fantastic work, even though you're having to put up with King Carino. You've got Best in the World coming up on June the 19th in New York City. Then the following day, like you said, the Aftershock TV taping, New York City, Terminal 5. And you'll have that special attraction match with Samoa Joe and AJ Styles taking on Daniels and Kazarian. People can go online, go to ROHWrestling.com, find out more about the company. Of course, you can find Ring of Honor on TV, Sinclair stations in your area, NESN. It's in Dallas. It's in Atlanta as well on stations there. Plus, every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, it's on Destination America. And you can find Kevin on Twitter. It's at RealKevinKelly. So, Kevin, like I said, you keep up the great work, man. I always enjoy talking to you, and loving watching some Ring of Honor right now and hearing you on the call.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Thanks for the time, and thanks to all the fans that are making Ring of Honor so very special right now.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Man, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you. Have a nice day.